This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Britt Marie Was Here, a novel by Frederick Bachman, read by Joan Walker.
Chapter 1. Forks, knives, spoons. In that order. Britt Marie is certainly not the kind of person who judges other people, far from it. Though surely no civilized person would even think of arranging a cutlery drawer in a different way from how cutlery drawers are supposed to be arranged. We're not animals, are we? It's a Monday in January. She's sitting at a desk in the unemployment office. Admittedly, there's no cutlery in sight, but it's on her mind because it sums up everything that's gone wrong recently. Cutlery should be arranged as it always has been, because life should go on unchanged. Normal life is presentable. In normal life, you clean up the kitchen and keep your balcony tidy and take care of your children. It's hard work, harder than one might think. In normal life, you certainly don't find yourself sitting in the unemployment office. The girl who works here has staggeringly short hair, Britt Marie thinks, like a man's. Not that there's anything wrong with that, of course, it's modern, no doubt. The girl points at a piece of paper and smiles, evidently in a hurry. Just fill in your name, social security number, and address here, please. Britt Marie has to be registered, as if she were a criminal, as if she's come to steal a job rather than find one. Milk and sugar? The girl asks, pouring some coffee into a plastic mug. Britt Marie doesn't judge anyone, far from it, but who would behave like that, a plastic mug? Are we at war? She'd like to say just that to the girl, but because Kent is always urging Britt Marie to be more socially aware, she just smiles as diplomatically as she can and waits to be offered a coaster. Kent is Britt Marie's husband. He's an entrepreneur. Incredibly, incredibly successful. Has business dealings with Germany and is extremely, extremely socially aware. The girl offers her two tiny disposable cartons of the sort of milk that doesn't have to be kept in the fridge. Then she holds out a plastic mug with plastic teaspoons protruding from it. Britt Marie could not have looked more startled if she'd been offered roadkill. No milk and sugar after all? Asks the girl. Britt Marie shakes her head and brushes her hand over the table as if it was covered in invisible crumbs. There are papers everywhere, in any old order. The girl clearly doesn't have time to tidy them up, Britt Marie realizes. She's probably far too busy with her career. Okay, says the girl, pleasantly, turning back to the form. Just write your address here. Britt Marie fixes her gaze on her lap. She misses being at home with her cutlery drawer. She misses Kent, because Kent is the one who fills in all the forms. When the girl looks about to open her mouth again, Britt Marie interrupts her. You forgot to give me a coaster, says Britt Marie, smiling, with all the social awareness she can muster. I don't want to make marks on your table. Could I trouble you to give me something to put my coffee cup on? She uses that distinctive tone which Britt Marie relies on whenever she has to summon all her inner goodness to refer to it as a cup, even though it is a plastic mug. Oh, don't worry, just put it anywhere. As if life was as simple as that. As if using a coaster or organizing the cutlery drawer in the right order didn't matter. The girl, who clearly doesn't appreciate the value of coasters, or proper cups, or even mirrors, judging by her hairstyle, taps her pen against the paper by the address box. But surely we can't just put our cups on the table. That leaves marks on a table. Surely you see that? The girl glances at the surface of the desk, which looks as if toddlers have been trying to eat potatoes off it, with pitchforks, in the dark. It really doesn't matter. It's so old and scratched up already, she says, with a smile. Britt Marie is screaming inside. I don't suppose you've considered that it's because you don't use coasters, she mutters, not at all in a passive-aggressive way, which is how Kent's children once described her when they thought she wasn't listening. Britt Marie is not actually passive-aggressive. She's considerate. After she heard Kent's children saying she was passive-aggressive, she was extra considerate for several weeks. The unemployment office girl looks a little strained. Okay, what did you say your name was? Brit, right? Brit Marie. Only my sister calls me Brit. Okay, Brit Marie, if you could just fill in the form, please. Brit Marie peers at the paper, which requires her to give assurances about where she lives and who she is. An unreasonable amount of paperwork is required these days just to be a human being, a preposterous amount of administration for society to let one take part. In the end, she reluctantly fills in her name, social security number, and her mobile telephone number. The address box is left empty. What's your educational background, Brit Marie? Brit Marie squeezes her handbag. I'll have you know that my education is excellent. But no formal education. For your information, I solve an enormous number of crosswords, which is not the sort of thing one can do without an education. She takes a very small gulp of the coffee. It doesn't taste like Kent's coffee at all. Kent makes very good coffee. Everyone says so. Brit Marie takes care of the coasters, and Kent takes care of the coffee. Okay, what sort of life experience do you have? My latest employment was as a waitress. I had outstanding references. The girl looks hopeful. And when was that? 1978. Ah, and you haven't worked since then?
I have worked every day since then. I've helped my husband with his company.
Again, the girl looks hopeful. Now, what sort of tasks did you perform in the company? I took care of the children and saw to it that our home was presentable. The girl smiles to hide her disappointment, as people do when they don't have the ability to distinguish between a place to live and a home. It's actually thoughtfulness that makes the difference. Because of thoughtfulness, there are coasters and proper coffee cups and beds that are made so tightly in the mornings that Kent jokes with his acquaintances about how, if you stumble on the threshold on the way into the bedroom, there's a smaller risk of breaking your leg if you land on the floor than the bedspread. Brit Marie loathes it when he talks that way. Surely, civilized people lift their feet when they walk across bedroom thresholds. Whenever Brit Marie and Kent go away, Brit Marie sprinkles the mattress with bicarbonate of soda for 20 minutes before she makes the bed. The bicarbonate of soda absorbs dirt and humidity, leaving the mattress much fresher. Bicarbonate of soda helps almost everything in Brit Marie's experience. Kent usually complains about being late. Brit Marie clasps her hands together over her stomach and says, "I absolutely must be allowed to make the bed before we leave, Kent. Just imagine if we die." This is the actual reason why Brit Marie hates travelling. Death. Not even bicarbonate of soda has any effect on death. Kent says she exaggerates, but people do actually drop dead all the time when they're away, and what would the landlord think if they had to break down the door only to find an unclean mattress? Surely they'd conclude that Kent and Brit Marie lived in their own dirt. The girl checks her watch. Okay, she says. Brit Marie feels her tone has a note of criticism in it. The children are twins, and we have a balcony. It's more work than you think, having a balcony. The girl nods tentatively. How old are your children? Kent's children. They're 30. So they've left home, obviously. And you're 63 years old.
Yes,
says Brit Marie dismissively, as if this was highly irrelevant. The girl clears her throat as if, actually, it's very relevant indeed. Well, Brit Marie, quite honestly, because of the financial crisis and all that, I mean, there's a scarcity of jobs for people in your situation. The girl sounds a bit as if situation was not her first choice as a way of concluding the sentence. Brit Marie smiles patiently.
Kent says that the financial crisis is over. He's an entrepreneur, you must understand, so he understands these kind of things, which are possibly a little outside your field of competence.
The girl blinks for an unnecessary amount of time, checks her watch. She seems uncomfortable, which stresses Brit Marie. She quickly decides to give the girl a compliment, just to show her goodwill. She looks around the room for something to compliment her about, and finally manages to say, with as generous a smile as she can muster,
"You have a very modern hairstyle."
What? she replies, her fingertips moving self-consciously towards her scalp.
It's very courageous of you to wear your hair so short when you have such a large forehead.
Why does the girl look offended? Britt Marie wonders. Clearly that's what happens when you try to be sociable towards young people these days. The girl rises from her chair.
Thanks for coming, Britt Marie. You are registered on our database. We'll be in touch.
She holds out her hand to say goodbye. Britt Marie stands up and places the plastic mug of coffee in her hand.
When?
Well, it's difficult to say. I suppose I'm supposed to just sit and wait,
counters Britt Marie with a diplomatic smile,
as if I didn't have anything better to do.
The girl swallows.
Well, my colleague will be in touch with you about a job seeker's training course, and I don't want a course, I want a job.
Absolutely, but it's difficult to say when something will turn up. Britt Marie gets out a notebook from her pocket.
Shall we say tomorrow, then?
What?
Could something turn up tomorrow?
The girl clears her throat. Well, it could, or I'd rather say... Britt Marie gets out a pencil from her bag, eyes the pencil with some disapproval, and then looks at the girl.
Might I trouble you for a pencil sharpener? She asks.
A pencil sharpener? Asks the girl, as if she'd been asked for a 1,000-year-old magical artifact.
I need to put our meeting on the list.
Some people don't understand the value of lists, but Britt Marie is not one of those people. She has so many lists that she has to keep a separate list to list all the lists. Otherwise anything could happen.
She could die, or forget to buy bicarbonate of soda.
The girl offers her a biro and says something to the effect of, actually, I don't have time tomorrow. But Britt Marie is too busy peering at the biro to hear what she's saying.
Surely we can't write lists in ink, she bursts out.
That's all I've got. The girl says this with some finality.
Is there anything else I can help you with today, Britt Marie?
Britt Marie responds after a moment. Britt Marie often says that.
Ha!
Not as in, ha-ha, but as in, ah-ha, spoken in a particularly disappointed tone. Like when you find a wet towel thrown on the bathroom floor.
Ha!
Immediately after saying this, Britt Marie always firmly closes her mouth, to emphasise this is the last thing she intends to say on the subject, although it rarely is the last thing. The girl hesitates. Britt Marie grasps the biro as if it's sticky, looks at the list marked Tuesday in her notebook, and at the top, above cleaning and shopping, she writes, Unemployment Office to contact me. She hands back the pen. It was very nice to meet you, says the girl robotically. We'll be in touch.
Ha!
Says Britt Marie with a nod. Britt Marie leaves the unemployment office. The girl is obviously under the impression that this is the last time they'll meet, because she's unaware of how scrupulously Britt Marie sticks to her lists. Clearly the girl has never seen Britt Marie's balcony. It's an astonishingly, astonishingly presentable balcony. It's January outside, a winter chill in the air but no snow on the ground, below zero without any evidence of it. The very worst time of year for balcony plants. After leaving the unemployment office, Britt Marie goes to a supermarket that is not her usual supermarket where she buys everything on her list. She doesn't like shopping on her own because she doesn't like pushing the shopping trolley. Kent always pushes the shopping trolley while Britt Marie walks at his side and holds onto a corner of it. Not because she's trying to steer, only that she likes holding onto things while he is also holding onto them. For the sake of the feeling of going somewhere at the same time. She eats her dinner cold at exactly 6 o'clock. She's used to sitting up all night waiting for Kent, so she tries to put his portion in the fridge. But the only fridge here is full of very small bottles of alcohol. She lowers herself onto a bed that isn't hers, while rubbing her ring finger, a habit she falls into when she's nervous. A few days ago she was sitting on her own bed, spinning her wedding ring after cleaning the mattress extra carefully with bicarbonate of soda. Now she's rubbing the white mark on her skin where the ring used to be. The building has an address, but it's certainly neither a place to live nor a home. On the floor are two rectangular plastic boxes for balcony flowers that the hostel room doesn't have a balcony. Britt Marie has no one to sit up all night waiting for. But she sits up anyway. Chapter 2 The unemployment office opens at 9 o'clock. Britt Marie waits until 9:02 before going in, because she doesn't want to seem pig-headed.
You were supposed to contact me today, she announces, not at all pig-headedly when the girl opens her office door.
What? The girl exclaims, her face entirely liberated from any kind of positive emotion. She is surrounded by similarly dressed people clutching plastic mugs.
Look, we're just about to begin a meeting.
Oh, right.
I suppose it's important, says Britt Marie, adjusting a crease in her skirt that only she can see.
Well, yes. And I'm not important, of course. The girl contorts herself as if her clothes have suddenly changed size.
You know, I told you yesterday I'd be in touch if something turned up. I never said it would be But I've put it on the list, says Britt Marie, producing her notebook and pointing at it determinedly. I wouldn't have put it on the list if you hadn't said it. You must understand that. And you made me write it in ink.
The girl takes a deep breath.
Look, I'm very sorry if there's been a misunderstanding, but I have to go back to my meeting. Maybe you'd have more time to find people jobs if you didn't spend your day in meetings, observes Britt Marie as the girl shuts the door.
Britt Marie is left on her own in the corridor. She notes there are two stickers on the girl's door just under the handle, at a height where a child would put them. Both have footballs on them. This reminds her of Kent, because Kent loves football. He loves football in a way that nothing else in his life can live up to. He loves football even more than he loves telling everyone how much something costs after he's bought it. During the big football championships, the crossword supplements are replaced by special football sections, and after that it's hardly possible to get a sensible word out of Kent. If Britt Marie asks what he wants for dinner, he just mumbles that it doesn't matter, without even taking his eyes off the page. Britt Marie has never forgiven football for that, for taking Kent away from her, and for depriving her of her crossword supplement. She rubs the white mark on her ring finger. She remembers the last time the morning newspaper replaced the crossword supplement with a football section, because she read the newspaper 4 times in the hope of finding a small, hidden crossword somewhere. She never found one, but she did find an article about a woman of the same age as Britt Marie who had died. Britt Marie can't get it out of her head. The article described how the woman had lain dead for several weeks before she was found, after the neighbours made a complaint about a bad smell from her flat. Britt Marie can't stop thinking about that article, can't stop thinking about how vexatious it would be if the neighbours started complaining about bad smells. It said in the article that the cause of death had been natural. A neighbour said that the woman's dinner was still on the table when the landlord walked into the flat. Britt Marie had asked Kent what he thought the woman had eaten. She thought it must be awful to die in the middle of your dinner, as if the food was terrible. Kent mumbled that it hardly made any difference, and turned up the volume on the TV. Britt Marie fetched his shirt from the bedroom floor and put it in the washing machine as usual. Then she washed it and reorganized his electric shaver in the bathroom. Kent often maintained that she had hidden his shaver when he stood there in the mornings yelling Britt Marie because he couldn't find it, but she wasn't hiding it at all. She was reorganizing. There's a difference. Sometimes she reorganized because it was necessary, and sometimes she did it because she loved hearing him call out her name in the mornings. After 30 minutes, the door to the girl's office opens. People emerge. The girl says goodbye and smiles enthusiastically until she notices Britt Marie.
Oh, you're still here. So, as I said, Britt Marie, I'm really sorry, but I don't have time for...
Britt Marie stands up and brushes some invisible crumbs from her skirt.
You like football, I see,
Britt Marie offers, nodding at the stickers on the door.
That must be nice for you.
The girl brightens.
Yes. You too?
Certainly not. Right. The girl peers at her watch and then at another clock on the wall. She's quite clearly bent on trying to get Britt Marie out of there, so Britt Marie smiles patiently and decides to say something sociable.
Your hairstyle is different today.
What?
Different from yesterday. It's modern, I suppose.
What, the hairstyle?
Never having to make up your mind. Then she adds at once, not that there's anything wrong with that, of course. In fact, it looks very practical.
In actual fact, it mainly looks short and spiky, like when someone has spilled orange juice on a shag pile rug. Kent always used to spill his drink when he was having vodka and orange juice during his football matches, until one day Britt Marie had enough and moved the rug to the guest room. That was 13 years ago, but she still often thinks about it. Britt Marie's rugs and Britt Marie's memories have a lot in common in that sense. They are both very difficult to wash. The girl clears her throat.
Look, I'd love to talk further, but as I keep trying to tell you, I just don't have time at the moment.
When do you have time?
Britt Marie asks, getting out her notebook and methodically going through a list.
3 o'clock?
I'm fully booked today. I could also manage 4 or even 5 o'clock,
Britt Marie offers, conferring with herself.
We close at 5 today, says the girl. Let's say 5 o'clock then.
What?
No, we close at 5.
We certainly can't have a meeting later than 5,
Britt Marie protests.
What? Says the girl.
Britt Marie smiles with enormous, enormous patience.
I don't want to cause a scene here, not at all, but my dear girl, civilized people have their dinner at 6, so any later than 5 is surely a bit on the late side for a meeting, wouldn't you agree? Or are you saying we should have our meeting while we're eating?
No, I mean, what?
Ha! Well, in that case, you have to make sure you're not late, so the potatoes don't get cold.
Then she writes, 1800 hours, dinner, on her list. The girl calls out something behind Britt Marie, but Britt Marie is already gone, because she actually doesn't have time to stand here going on about this all day. Chapter 3. It's 16:55. Britt Marie is waiting by herself in the street outside the unemployment office, because it would be impolite to go in too early for the meeting. The wind ruffles her hair gently. She misses her balcony so much, it pains her to even think about it. She has to squeeze her eyes shut so tightly that her temples start hurting. She often busies herself on the balcony at nights while she's waiting for Kent. He always says she shouldn't wait up for him. She always does. She usually notices his car from the balcony, and by the time he steps inside, his food is already on the table. Once he's fallen asleep in their bed, she picks up his shirt from the bedroom floor and puts it in the washing machine. If the collar is dirty, she goes over it beforehand with vinegar and bicarbonate of soda. Early in the morning, she wakes and fixes her hair and tidies up the kitchen, sprinkles bicarbonate of soda in the balcony flower boxes, and polishes all the windows with Faxin. Faxin is Britt Marie's brand of window cleaner. It's even better than bicarbonate of soda. She doesn't feel like a fully-fledged human being unless she has a more or less full bottle at the ready. No Faxin? Anything could happen in such a situation. So she wrote, "Buy Faxin," on her shopping list this afternoon. She considered adding exclamation marks at the end to really highlight the seriousness of it, but managed to contain herself. Then she went to the supermarket that isn't her usual, where nothing is arranged as usual. She asked a young person working there for Faxin. He didn't even know what it was. When Britt Marie explained that it's her brand of window cleaner, he just shrugged and suggested a different brand. At which point, Britt Marie got so angry that she got out her list and added an exclamation mark. The shopping trolley was playing up, and she even ran over her own foot with it. She closed her eyes and sucked in her cheeks and missed Kent. She found some salmon on sale and got some potatoes and vegetables. From a little shelf marked stationery, she took a pencil and 2 pencil sharpeners and put them in her trolley.
"Are you a member?" asked the young man when she reached the till.
"Of what?"
Britt Marie asked, suspiciously.
"The salmon is only on sale for members," he said.
Britt Marie smiled patiently.
"This is not my usual supermarket, you see. In my usual supermarket, my husband is a member."
The young man held out a brochure.
"You can apply here. It only takes a sec.
All you do is fill in your name and address here, and certainly not, said Britt Marie immediately.
Because surely there's some kind of limit. Do you really have to register and leave your name and address like some suspected terrorist just because you want to buy a bit of salmon?
Well, in that case, you have to pay full price for the salmon.
Ha! Huh. The young man looked unsure of himself.
Look, if you don't have enough money on you, I can...
Britt Marie gave him a wide-eyed stare. She wanted so badly to raise her voice, but her vocal cords wouldn't cooperate.
My dear little man, I have plenty of money, absolutely plenty.
She tried to yell and to slap down her wallet on the conveyor belt, but it was more like a whisper and a little pushing movement. The young man shrugged and took her payment. Britt Marie wanted to tell him that her husband was actually an entrepreneur and that she was actually well able to pay the full price for some salmon. But the young man had already started serving the next customer, as if she didn't make any difference. At exactly 1700 hours, Britt Marie knocks on the door of the girl's office. When the girl opens the door, she's wearing her coat.
Where are you going?
Asks Britt Marie. The girl seems to pick up an incriminating note in her voice.
We're closing now, as I told you, I have to... Are you coming back, then? What time should I expect you?
What?
I have to know when I'm supposed to put on the potatoes.
The girl rubs her eyelids with her knuckles.
Yes, yeah, okay. I'm sorry, Britt Marie, but as I tried to tell you, I don't have the... These are for you,
says Britt Marie, offering her the pencil. When the girl takes it in some confusion, Britt Marie also holds out a pair of pencil sharpeners, one of them blue and the other pink. She nods at these, and then she nods in a wholly unprejudicial way at the girl's boyish hairstyle.
You know, there's no knowing what sort you people like nowadays, so I got both colours.
The girl doesn't seem quite sure who Britt Marie is referring to by you people.
Thanks, I guess.
Now, I'd like to be shown to the kitchen, if it's not too much bother to you, because otherwise I'll be late with the potatoes.
The girl very briefly looks as if she's going to exclaim, kitchen, but at the last moment she holds back, and, like small children next to bathtubs, seems to understand that protesting will only prolong the process and make it more tortuous. She simply gives up, points to the staff kitchen and takes the food bag from Britt Marie, who follows her down the corridor. Britt Marie decides to acknowledge her civility with some sort of compliment of her own.
That's a fine coat you have there, she says, at long last.
The girl's hand slides in surprise over the fabric of her coat.
Thanks.
She smiles sincerely, opening the door to the kitchen.
It's courageous of you to wear red at this time of year. Where are the cooking implements?
With diminishing patience, the girl opens a drawer. One half is a jumble of cooking implements, the other holds a plastic compartment for cutlery. A single compartment. Forks, knives, spoons. Together, the girl's irritation turns to genuine concern.
Are you all right?
She asks Britt Marie. Britt Marie has gone over to a chair to sit down and looks on the verge of passing out.
Barbarians, she whispers, sucking in her cheeks.
The girl drops onto a chair opposite, seems at a loss. Her gaze settles on Britt Marie's left hand. Britt Marie's fingertips are uncomfortably rubbing the white mark on her skin, like the scar of an amputated limb. When she notices the girl looking, she hides her hand under her handbag, looking as though she's caught someone spying on her in the shower. Gently the girl raises her eyebrows.
Can I just ask? Sorry, but, I mean, what are you really doing here, Britt Marie?
I want a job,
Britt Marie replies, digging in her bag for a handkerchief, so she can give the table a rub down. The girl moves about in a confused attempt to find a relaxed position.
With all due respect, Britt Marie, you haven't had a job in 40 years. Why is it so important now?
I have had a job for 40 years. I've taken care of a home. That's why it's important now, says Britt Marie, and brushes some imaginary crumbs off the table.
When the girl doesn't answer right away, she adds,
I read in the newspaper about a woman who lay dead in her flat for several weeks, you see. They said the cause of death was natural. Her dinner was still on the table. It's actually not very natural at all. No one knew she was dead until her neighbours reacted to the smell.
The girl fiddles confusedly with her hair. So you sort of want a job so that, she says, fumblingly. Britt Marie exhales with great patience.
She had no children, and no husband, and no job. No one knew she was there. If one has a job, people notice if one doesn't show up.
The girl, still at work long after her day should be over, sits there, looking for a long, long time at the woman who's kept her here. Britt Marie sits with a straight back, like she sits on the chair on the balcony when she's waiting for Kent. She never wanted to go to bed when Kent wasn't home, because she didn't want to go to sleep unless someone knew she was there. She sucks in her cheeks, rubs the white mark.
Ha! You believe it's preposterous, of course. I'm certainly aware that conversation isn't one of my strengths. My husband says I'm socially incompetent.
The last words come out more quietly than the rest. The girl swallows and nods at the ring that is no longer on Britt Marie's finger.
What happened to your husband?
He had a heart attack.
I'm sorry, I didn't know he'd died.
He didn't die,
whispers Britt Marie.
Oh, I thought...
Britt Marie interrupts her by getting up and starting to sort the cutlery as if it has committed some kind of crime.
I don't use perfume, so I asked him to always put his shirt directly in the washing machine when he came home. He never did. Then he used to yell at me because the washing machine was so loud at night.
She stops abruptly and gives the cooker a quick lecture about its buttons being the wrong way around. It looks ashamed of itself. Britt Marie nods again and says,
His other woman called me after he'd had his heart attack.
The girl stands up to help, then sits down watchfully when Britt Marie takes the filleting knife from the drawer.
When Kent's children were small and stayed with us every other week, I made a habit of reading to them. My favourite was The Master Tailor. It's a fairy tale, you understand. The children wanted me to make up my own stories, but I can't see the point of it, when there are perfectly good ones already written by professionals. Kent said it was because I don't have any imagination, but actually my imagination is excellent.
The girl doesn't answer. Britt Marie sets the oven temperature. She puts the salmon in an oven dish, then just stands there.
It takes an excellent imagination to pretend one doesn't understand anything year in, year out, even though one washes all his shirts and one doesn't use perfume, she whispers.
The girl stands up again, puts her hand fumblingly on Britt Marie's shoulder.
Sorry,
she starts to say. She stops, although she hasn't been interrupted. Britt Marie clasps her hands together over her stomach and looks into the oven.
I want a job, because I actually don't think it's very edifying to disturb the neighbours with bad smells. I want someone to know I'm here.
There's nothing to say to that. When the salmon is ready, they sit at the table and eat it without looking at each other.
She's very beautiful. Young. I don't blame him. I actually don't,
says Britt Marie at long last.
She's probably a slag, the girl offers.
What does that mean?
Asks Britt Marie, looking uncomfortable.
It's something bad.
Britt Marie looks down at her plate again.
Ha! That was nice of you.
She feels as though she should say something nice back. So, with a certain amount of strain, she manages to say,
Your hair looks nice today.
The girl smiles.
Thanks.
Britt Marie nods.
I'm not seeing as much of your forehead today, not like yesterday.
The girl scratches her forehead just under her fringe. Britt Marie looks down at her plate and tries to resist the instinct to serve up a portion for Kent. The girl says something. Britt Marie looks up and mumbles.
Pardon me?
It was very nice, this, says the girl. without Brit Marie even asking. Chapter 4. And then Brit Marie got herself a job, which happened to be in a place called Borg. 2 days after inviting the girl from the unemployment office to have some salmon, that's where Brit Marie heads off to in her car. So we should now say a few words about Borg. Borg is a community built along a road. That's really the kindest possible thing one can say about it. It's not a place that could be described as one in a million, rather as one of millions of others. It has a closed-down football pitch, and a closed-down school, and a closed-down chemists, and a closed-down off-license, and a closed-down healthcare centre, and a closed-down supermarket, and a closed-down shopping centre, and a road that bears away in two directions. There is a recreation centre that has admittedly not been closed down, but only because they haven't had time to do it yet. It takes time to close down an entire community, obviously, and the recreation centre has had to wait its turn. Apart from that, the only two noticeable things in Borg are football and the pizzeria, because these tend to be the last things to abandon humanity. Brit Marie's first contact with the pizzeria and the recreation centre are on that day in January when she stops her white car between them. Her first contact with football is when one hits her, very hard, on the head. This takes place just after her car has blown up. You might sum it up by saying that Borg and Brit Marie's first impressions of each other are not wholly positive. If one wants to be pedantic about it, the actual explosion happens while Brit Marie is turning into the parking area. On the passenger side, Brit Marie is very clear about that, and if she had to describe the sound, she'd say it was a bit like a kaboom. Understandably, she's in a panic and she abandons both brake and clutch pedals, whereupon the car splutters pathetically. After a few unduly dramatic deviations across the frozen January puddles, it comes to an abrupt stop outside a building with a partially broken sign, the neon lights of which spell the name Pitz Rye. Terrified, Brit Marie jumps out of the car, expecting it, quite reasonably under the circumstances, to be engulfed in flames at any moment. This does not happen. Instead, Brit Marie is left standing on her own in the parking area, surrounded by the sort of silence that only exists in small, remote communities. It's a touch on the annoying side. She adjusts her skirt and grips her handbag firmly. A football rolls in a leisurely manner across the gravel, away from Brit Marie's car, and towards what Brit Marie assumes must be the recreation centre. After a moment, there's a disconcerting thumping noise. Determined not to be distracted from the tasks at hand, she gets out a list from her handbag. At the top it says, Drive to Borg. She ticks that point. The next item on the list is, Pick up key from post office. She gets out the mobile phone that Kent gave her 5 years ago and uses it for the first time. Hello, says the girl at the unemployment office. Is that how people answer the phone nowadays? Says Brit Marie. Helpfully, not critically. What? Says the girl. For a few moments still blissfully unaware that Brit Marie has not necessarily walked out of the girl's life just because she's walked out of the unemployment office. I'm here now in this place, Borg, but something is making an awful racket and my car has blown up. How far is it to the post office? Brit Marie, is that you? I can hardly hear you. Did you say blown up? Are you okay? Of course I am, but what about the car?
I don't know the first thing about cars, tries the girl.
Brit Marie releases an extremely patient exhalation of air.
You said I should call you if I had any questions, she reminds her.
Brit Marie feels it would be unreasonable for her to be expected to know everything about cars. She has only driven on a very few occasions since she and Kent were married. She never goes anywhere in a car unless Kent is there, and Kent is an absolutely excellent driver. I meant questions about the job.
That's the only important thing, of course, the career. If I'm killed in an explosion, that's not important, of course, states Brit Marie. Maybe it's even good if I die. Then you'll have a job going spare.
Please, Brit Marie,
I can hardly hear you,
bellows Brit Marie in a very helpful way and hangs up. Then she stands there on her own, sucking in her cheeks. Something is still thumping on the other side of the recreation centre, which is still standing only because at the last councillors' meeting in December there were so many other things already scheduled for closure. The local authority representatives were concerned it might cause a postponement of their annual Christmas dinner. In view of the importance of the Christmas dinner, the closure was pushed back to the end of January, after the holiday period of the local authority councillors. Obviously, the communications officer of the local authority should have been responsible for communicating this to the personnel department, but unfortunately the communications officer went on holiday and forgot to communicate it. As a result, when the personnel department found that the local authority had a building without anyone to take care of it, a vacancy for a caretaker of the recreation centre was advertised with the unemployment office in early January. That was the long and the short of it. Anyway, the job is not only exceptionally badly paid, but also temporary and subject to the decision regarding the closure of the recreation centre to be reached at the councillors' meeting in 3 weeks' time. And to top it all, the recreation centre is in Borg. The number of applicants for the position were, for these reasons, fairly limited. But it just so happened that the girl at the unemployment office, who, very much against her will, ate salmon with Britt Marie the day before yesterday, promised Britt Marie that she would really try to find her a job. The next morning at 9:02, when Britt Marie knocked on the girl's door to inform herself about how this was going, the girl tapped her computer for a while, then eventually said, "There is one job, but it's in the middle of nowhere and so badly paid that if you're receiving unemployment benefits, you'll probably be out of pocket."
"I don't get any benefits," said Britt Marie, as if they were a disease.
The girl sighed again and tried to say something about retraining courses and measures that Britt Marie might be eligible for, but Britt Marie made it clear that she certainly wouldn't welcome any of those measures. "Please, Britt Marie, this is just a job for 3 weeks. It's not really the kind of thing you want to be applying for at your age. Plus, you'd have to move all the way to this place." Now, Britt Marie is in Borg, and her car has blown up. It's hardly the best possible first day in her new job, one might say. She calls the girl back.
"Where can I expect to find the cleaning equipment?" asks Britt Marie.
"What?" asks the girl.
"You said I should call if I had any questions about the job."
The girl mutters something unintelligible, her voice sounding as if it's coming from inside a tin can.
"Now, you have to listen to me, my dear. I fully intend to find the post office you have informed me about and pick up the keys to the recreation centre, but I am not putting one foot inside the recreation centre until you inform me of the whereabouts of the cleaning equip."
Once again, she is interrupted by the ball rolling across the parking area. Britt Marie dislikes this. It's nothing personal. She hasn't decided to pick on this football in particular. It's just that she just dislikes all footballs, entirely without prejudice. The football is being pursued by two children. They are exceedingly dirty, all three of them, if you include the ball. The children's jeans are all torn down their thighs. They catch up with the ball, kick it back in the opposite direction, and once again disappear behind the recreation centre. One of them loses his balance and steadies himself by putting his hand against the window, where he leaves a black handprint.
"What's happening?" asks the girl. "Shouldn't those children be at school?" Britt Marie exclaims,
reminding herself to put an extra exclamation mark after "by faxin" on her list, if this place even has a supermarket.
"What?" says the girl. "My dear girl, you have to stop saying what all the time. It makes you sound so untalented." "What?" "There are children here." "Okay, but please, Britt Marie, I don't know anything about Borg. I've never been there, and I'm not hearing you. I think you... Are you sure you're not holding the telephone upside down?"
Britt Marie gives the telephone a scrutinizing look, turns it around.
"Ha!"
she says into the microphone, as if the fault lay with the person at the other end of the line.
"Okay, I can hear you at last," says the girl, encouragingly.
"I've never used this telephone.
There are actually people who have other things to do than spending all day talking into their telephones, you understand?"
"Oh, don't worry, I'm just the same when I have a new telephone."
"I'm certainly not worrying, and this is absolutely not a new telephone. It's 5 years old,"
Britt Marie corrects her.
I've never needed one before. I've had things to get on with, you see. I don't call anyone except Kent, and I call him on the home telephone like a civilized person.
But what if you're out, then? Asks the girl, instinctually unable to process what the world looked like before one could get hold of anyone at any time of the day.
My dear girl, she explains patiently, if I'm out, I'm out with Kent.
Britt Marie was probably intending to say something else, but that's the point at which she sees the rat, more or less as big as a normal-sized flower pot, scampering across patches of ice in the parking area. Looking back, Britt Marie is of the firm opinion that she wanted to scream very loudly, but unfortunately she did not have time for that, because everything abruptly went black, and Britt Marie's body lay unconscious on the ground. Britt Marie's first contact with football, in Borg, is when one hits her very hard on the head.
Chapter 5 Britt Marie wakes up on a floor. Somebody is leaning over her, saying something. But Britt Marie's first thoughts are about the floor. She's worried that it may be dirty and that people might think she's dead. These things happen all the time, people falling over and dying. It would be horrific, thinks Britt Marie, to die on a dirty floor. What would people think?
Hello?
Are you, what's it called, deceased? Somebody asks. But Britt Marie keeps focusing on the floor.
Hello, lady, are you, you know, dead?
Somebody repeats and makes a little whistling sound. Britt Marie dislikes whistling and she has a headache. The floor smells of pizza. It would be awful to die with a headache while smelling of pizza. She's not at all keen on pizza because Kent smelled so much of pizza when he came home late from his meetings with Germany. Britt Marie remembers all his smells. Most of all, the smell of the hospital room. It was loaded with bouquets. It is common practice to receive flowers when you have a heart attack, but Britt Marie can still remember that smell of perfume and pizza from the shirt by the side of his bed. He was sleeping, snoring slightly. She held his hand a last time without waking him. Then she folded up the shirt and put it in her handbag. When she came home, she cleaned the collar with bicarbonate of soda and vinegar and washed it twice before she hung it up. Then she polished the windows with Vaxin and freshened up the mattress and brought in the balcony boxes and packed her bag and turned on her mobile telephone for the first time in her life. For the first time in their life together. She thought the children might call and ask how things were with Kent. They didn't. They both sent a single text message. There was a time just after their teenage years when they still promised to come to visit at Christmas. Then they started pretending to have reasons for cancelling. After a year or two, they stopped pretending to have reasons for cancelling. In the end, they stopped pretending that they were coming at all. That's how life went. Britt Marie has always liked the theatre, because she enjoys the way the actors get applauded at the end for their pretense. Kent's heart attack, and the voice of the young, beautiful thing meant there'd be no applause for her. You can't keep pretending someone doesn't exist when she speaks to you on the telephone. So Britt Marie left the hospital room, with a shirt smelling of perfume, and a broken heart. You don't get any flowers for that.
But shit, are you, like, dead?
Somebody asks impatiently. Britt Marie finds it extremely impolite for somebody to interrupt her in the midst of dying, especially with such terrible language. There are certainly a good number of alternatives to shit if you have a particular need to express such a feeling. She looks up at this somebody standing over her, looking down.
May I ask where I am?
Asks Britt Marie in confusion.
Hi there, at the health centre, says somebody cheerfully.
It smells of pizza,
Britt Marie manages to say.
Yeah, you know, health centre is also pizzeria, says somebody, nodding.
That hardly strikes me as hygienic,
Britt Marie manages to utter. Somebody shrugs his shoulders.
First pizzeria, you know, they closed down that health centre. Financial crisis, what a shit. So now, you know, we do what we can, but no worry, have first aid.
Somebody, who actually seems to be a woman, points jovially at an open plastic case marked with a red cross on the lid, and first aid written on it.
Then she waves a stinky bottle.
And here, you know, second aid you want? Excuse me?
Brit Marie squeaks with her hand on a painful bump on her forehead. Somebody, who on closer inspection is not standing over Brit Marie but sitting over her, offers her a glass.
They closed down the off-license here, so now we do what we can. Here, vodka from Estonia or some shit like that. Letters, bloody weird, you know, maybe not vodka but same shit burns your tongue, but you get used to it good when you get those, what's it called, flu blisters.
Tormented, Brit Marie shakes her head and catches sight of some red stains on her jacket.
Am I bleeding?
She bursts out, sitting up in terror. It would be terribly vexatious if she left bloodstains on somebody's floor, whether it's been mopped or not.
No, shit like that. Maybe you get a bump on your head from the shot, eh? But that's just tomato sauce, you know?
Yells somebody and tries to mop Brit Marie's jacket with a tissue. Brit Marie notices that somebody is in a wheelchair. It's a difficult thing not to notice. Furthermore, somebody seems intoxicated. Brit Marie bases this observation on the fact that somebody smells of vodka and can't quite manage to dab the tissue in the right place. But Brit Marie doesn't have any prejudices about it.
I was waiting here for you to stop looking deceased. Got hungry, you know, so I had a bit of lunch.
Sniggers somebody, pointing at a half-eaten pizza perched on a stool.
Lunch? At this time of day?
Mumbles Brit Marie because it isn't even 11 o'clock.
If you're hungry? Have pizza,
somebody explains. Only then does Brit Marie register what was said.
What do you mean, a bump from the shot? Have I been shot?
She exclaims, fingering her scalp as if searching for a hole.
Yeah, a football in the head, you know.
Somebody nods and spills vodka on the pizza. Brit Marie looks as if she may even have preferred a pistol to a pizza. She imagines that pistols are less dirty. Somebody who seems to be in her 40s helps her up, assisted by a girl in her early teens who has turned up at their side. Somebody has one of the worst hairstyles Brit Marie has ever laid eyes on, as if she's combed her hair with a terrified animal. The girl's hair is more respectable, but her jeans are torn to shreds across her thighs. Probably modern. Somebody sniggers without a care in the world.
Bloody brats, you know, bloody football, but don't get angry, they weren't aiming at you.
Brit Marie touches the bump on her forehead.
Is my face dirty?
She asks, simultaneously reproachful and anxious. Somebody shakes her head and rolls back towards her pizza. Brit Marie's gaze falls self-consciously on two men with beards and caps, sitting at a table in a corner, with cups of coffee and morning newspapers. It seems abominable to her, lying there passed out in front of people who are trying to have their coffee, yet neither of the men even glance at her.
You only passed out a little,
says somebody breezily, while shoveling the pizza into her mouth. Brit Marie gets out a small mirror from her handbag and starts rubbing her forehead. She found it very vexatious passing out, but nowhere near as vexatious as the thought of having passed out with a dirty face.
How do you know if they were aiming at me?
She asks, with just a touch of criticism.
They hit you?
Laughs somebody, throwing out her arms.
If they aim, they don't hit. These kids bloody terrible at football, huh?
Huh, says Brit Marie.
We're actually not that bad,
mutters the teenage girl standing next to them, looking offended. Brit Marie notices that she's holding the football in her hands, the way you hold a ball when that's what you have to do to stop yourself from repeatedly kicking it. Somebody gestures encouragingly at the girl.
My name's Vega. I work here,
the girl says. Shouldn't you be at school? Asks Brit Marie without taking her eyes off the football.
Shouldn't you be at work?
Answers Vega, holding the football, as you do when you're holding on to someone you love. Brit Marie grips her handbag more firmly.
Let me tell you something. I was on my way to work when I was hit on the head. I'm the caretaker of the recreation centre, I'll have you know. This is my first day.
Vega's mouth opens in surprise, as if this, in some way, changes everything. But she remains silent.
Caretaker?
Asks somebody,
Why didn't you say so, lady? I've got one of them, what's it called, registered letters, with the key.
I've been informed I'm to pick up the keys at the post office.
Oh, here. They're closed down, post office, you see,
shouts somebody, rolling around behind the counter, still with the bottle of vodka in her hand. There's a short silence. There's a tinkle from the door and a pair of dirty boots across the unmopped floor. Somebody yells out,
All right, Carl, I have packaging for you. Wait.
Britt Marie turns around and is almost knocked to the ground by someone crashing into her shoulder. She looks up and sees a thick beard just below an unreasonably dirty cap, the whole appendage looking back at her. There's a growl from somewhere between the beard and the cap.
Look where you're going.
Britt Marie, who wasn't even moving, is deeply puzzled. Then she grips her handbag even more firmly and says, Ha! Huh.
You walked into her,
Vega hisses behind her. Britt Marie doesn't like it at all. She gets confused when anyone defends her. It doesn't happen very often. Somebody comes back with Carl's packaging. Carl looks with irritation at Vega and hostility at Britt Marie. Then he nods grumpily to the two men at the corner table. They nod back even more grumpily. The door tinkles merrily behind Carl as he slopes out. Somebody pats Britt Marie encouragingly on the shoulder.
Never bloody mind about him. Carl has, like, what do you say, a lemon up his arse, you know what I mean? Pissed off at life and the universe and everything. People around here don't like visitors from the city,
she says to Britt Marie and nods at the men by the table when she says people. They keep reading their newspapers and drinking their coffee as if neither of the women were there.
How did he know I was from the city?
Somebody rolls her eyes.
Come on, I'll show you the recreation centre, huh?
She shouts and rolls off towards the door. Britt Marie looks at a section that leads off the pizzeria, healthcare centre, post office or whatever it is. There are shelves of groceries in there, as if it were a mini-market.
Could I ask, is this a grocer's?
They close down the supermarket, you know. We do what we can.
Britt Marie remembers the dirty windows in the recreation centre.
Might one ask if you have Faxin available here?
She asks. Britt Marie has never used any other brand than Faxin. She saw an advert for it in her father's morning newspaper when she was a child. A woman stood looking out of a clean window, and underneath was written, Faxin lets you see the world. Britt Marie loved that picture. As soon as she was old enough to have her own windows, she polished them with Faxin, continued doing so daily for the rest of her life, and never had any problems seeing the world. It was just that the world did not see her.
I know, you know, but there's no Faxin now, you know,
says somebody.
What's that supposed to mean?
Asks Britt Marie, only a touch reproachfully.
Faxin is not any more in manufacturers, what's it called, product range, not profitable, you know?
Britt Marie's eyes open wide and she makes a little gasp.
But how is that even legal?
Not profitable, says somebody with a shrug.
As if that's an answer. Surely people can't just behave like that, Britt Marie bursts out.
Somebody shrugs again.
Never mind, though, eh? I have another brand. You want Russian brand? Good shit over there,
she starts to say and gestures at Vega to run over and get it.
Absolutely not,
Britt Marie interrupts, walking towards the door as she hisses, I'll use bicarbonate of soda. Because you can't change Britt Marie's way of seeing the world. Because once Britt Marie has taken a position on the world, there's no changing her. Chapter 6 Britt Marie stumbles on the threshold, as if it's not just the people in Borg who are trying to push her away, but also the actual buildings. She stands on the wheelchair ramp leading up to the door of the pizzeria, curls her toes, making her foot into a little fist in her shoe to dull the pain. A tractor goes past on the road in one direction, a truck in the other, and then the road lies desolate. Britt Marie has never been in such a small community, only driven through places like this sitting next to Kent in the car. Kent was always very sneering about them. Britt Marie regains her composure and grips her handbag more firmly as she steps off the wheelchair ramp and crosses the large gravelled parking area. She walks fast, as if she's being chased by someone. Somebody rolls behind her. Vega takes the football and runs towards a group of other children, who are all wearing jeans that are torn across their thighs. After a couple of steps, Vega stops, peers at Britt Marie and mumbles,
"Sorry the ball hit your head. We weren't aiming at you."
Then she says quite curtly to somebody,
"But we could have hit it if we'd been aiming."
She turns around and shoots the ball past the boys into a wooden fence between the recreation centre and the pizzeria. One of the boys is at the receiving end, and he fires it into the fence again. Only then does Britt Marie realise where the thumping sounds in Borg come from. One of the boys takes aim at the fence, but instead manages to shoot the ball right back to Britt Marie, which, if you consider the angle, is quite an impressive feat as far as underachievements go. The ball rolls back slowly to Britt Marie. The children seem to be waiting for her to kick it back. Britt Marie moves out of the way as if the ball was trying to spit at her. The ball rolls past. Vega comes running.
"Why didn't you kick it?"
she asks, perplexed.
"Why on earth would I want to kick it?"
They glare at each other, filled with mutual conviction that the opposing party is utterly deranged. Vega kicks the ball back to the boys and runs off. Britt Marie brushes some dust from her skirt. Somebody takes a gulp of vodka.
"Bloody brats, you know, crap at football. They couldn't hit the water from, you know, a boat, but they don't have nowhere to play, right? Bloody crap. The council closed down the football ground, sold the land, and now they're building flats there. Then the financial crisis and all that shit, and now no flats, like they said, and no football pitch either."
"Kent says the financial crisis is over,"
Britt Marie informs her amicably. Somebody snorts.
"Maybe that Kent bloke has, what's it called, his head up his arse, huh?"
Britt Marie doesn't know if she's more offended because she doesn't know what this means or because she has an idea of what it means.
"Kent probably knows more about this than you do. He's an entrepreneur, you have to understand, incredibly successful, does business with Germany," she says, putting somebody to rights.
Somebody looks unimpressed, points at the children with her vodka bottle and says,
"They closed down the football team when they closed down the pitch. Good players moved to crap team in town."
She nods down the road towards what Britt Marie has to assume is town, then back at the children.
"Town, 20 kilometres that way, huh? These are, you know, the kids left behind, like your, what's it called, vaccine, discontinued product line. You have to be profitable, so this Kent, he may have his arse full of head, huh? Maybe financial crisis cleared out of the city, you know, but it likes Borg. It's living here now, the bastard."
Britt Marie notes the clear distinction between how she speaks of the town 20 kilometres away and the city Britt Marie comes from. There are two different levels of contempt. Somebody takes such a big hit on her bottle that her eyes tear up as she goes on.
"In Borg, everyone drove trucks. You know, there was, what's it called, a trucking company here. Then, you know, the bastard financial crisis. More people in Borg now than trucks, and more trucks than jobs."
Britt Marie keeps a firm grasp on her handbag and feels a need, for reasons that are not entirely apparent, to defend herself.
"There are rats here,"
she therefore informs somebody, not at all unpleasantly.
"Rats have to live somewhere, don't they?"
"Rats are filthy. They live in their own dirt."
Somebody digs in her ear, looks at her finger with interest, drinks some more vodka. Britt Marie nods and adds in a tone that in every possible way is extremely helpful.
"If you got involved in keeping things a bit cleaner here in Borg, then maybe you wouldn't have so much of a financial crisis."
Somebody doesn't give the impression that she's been listening very carefully.
"It's one of those, what's it called, myths. Dirty rats, it's a myth, eh? They're, what's it called, clean. Wash themselves like cats, you know, with tongue. Mice are crappy, crap everywhere, but rats have toilets. Always crap in same place, eh?"
She points at Britt Marie's car with her bottle.
"You should move the car.
They'll shoot football at it, huh?
Britt Marie shakes her head patiently. It certainly cannot be moved. It exploded as I was parking it. Somebody laughs. She pushes her wheelchair around the car and looks at the football-shaped dent in the passenger door.
Ah, flying stone, she chuckles.
What's that? Asks Britt Marie, reluctantly following behind and glaring at the football-shaped dent.
Flying stone. When the car workshop call insurance company, huh? Then the workshop say, flying stone, chuckles somebody.
Britt Marie fumbles after her list in her handbag. Ha! Might I ask where I'll find the nearest mechanic?
Here,
says somebody. Britt Marie peers skeptically. At somebody, obviously, not at the wheelchair. Britt Marie is not one of those types who judges people. You repair cars, do you? Somebody shrugs.
They shut down the car workshop, huh? We do what we can. But never bloody mind that now. I'll show you the recreation centre, yeah?
She holds up the envelope with the keys. Britt Marie takes it, looks at somebody's bottle of vodka and keeps a firm grip on her handbag. Then she shakes her head. That's perfectly all right, thank you. I don't want to create any bother.
No bother for me,
says somebody and nonchalantly rolls her wheelchair back and forth. Britt Marie smiles superbly. I wasn't alluding to your bother. Then she briskly turns around and marches off across the gravelled courtyard in case somebody gets the idea of trying to follow her. She lifts out her bags and flower boxes from the car and drags them over to the recreation centre, unlocks the door and steps inside, and locks it behind her. Not that she dislikes this somebody person, not at all. It's just that the smell of vodka reminds her of Kent. She looks around. The wall is thumping from the outside, and there are rat tracks in the dust on the floor. So Britt Marie does what she always does when facing emergencies in life. She cleans. She polishes the windows with a rag dipped in bicarbonate of soda, and wipes them with newspaper dampened with vinegar. It's almost as effective as Vaccine, but doesn't quite feel as good. She wipes the kitchen sink with bicarbonate of soda and water, and then mops all the floors, then mixes bicarbonate of soda and lemon juice to clean the tiles and taps in the bathroom, and then mixes bicarbonate of soda and toothpaste to polish the wash basin. Then she sprinkles bicarbonate of soda over her balcony boxes, as otherwise there'll be snails. The balcony boxes may look as if they only contain soil, but underneath there are flowers waiting for spring. The winter requires whoever is doing the watering to have a bit of faith, in order to believe that what looks empty has every potential. Britt Marie no longer knows whether she has faith or just hope. Maybe neither. The wallpaper of the recreation centre looks indifferently at her. It's covered in photos of people and footballs. Everywhere. Footballs. Every time Britt Marie glimpses another one in the corner of her eye, she rubs things even more aggressively with her sponge. She keeps cleaning until the thumping against the wall stops, and the children and the football have gone home. Only once the sun has gone down does Britt Marie realise that the lights inside only work in the kitchen. So she stays in there, stranded on a little island of artificial fluorescent light, in a soon-to-be-closed-down recreation centre. The kitchen is almost completely taken up by a draining board, a refrigerator, and two wooden stools. She opens the refrigerator to find it empty apart from a packet of coffee. She curses herself for not bringing any vanilla essence. If you mix vanilla essence with bicarbonate of soda, the refrigerator smells fresh. She stands hesitantly in front of the coffee percolator. It looks modern. She hasn't made coffee in many years because Kent makes very good coffee, and Britt Marie always finds it's best to wait for him. But this percolator has an illuminated button, which strikes Britt Marie as one of the most marvellous things she's seen in years, so she tries to open the lid where she assumes the coffee should be spooned in. It's stuck. The button starts blinking angrily. Britt Marie feels deeply mortified by this. She tugs at the lid in frustration. The blinking intensifies, upon which Britt Marie tugs at it with such insistence that the whole machine is knocked over. The lid snaps open, and a mess of coffee ground